At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday afternoon, August 24th, 2023. It's the Beating the Book podcast. Gil Alexander, U.S. Open tennis preview. Love it. Last slam of the year. Hard court slam. In what has been, for me, admittedly, tremendous CLV, not a damn winner kind of season. That is just how it's been. Hopefully, that turns here. It's been turned a little bit the last week here, but hopefully for the U.S. Open, it turns. And as always, to help us with a tennis slam, it's our buddy who is the co-host of not just the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, but also NBC Sports Bet the Edge pod. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody. Whale underscore Capper on Twitter. How you doing, Drew?
I'm tremendous, Gil. Always a fun day when we get to see a slam draw.
Yes, it is.
There's only four of them a year. One of them only, was today.
Only four a year. This is the one where we're like, oh, wait a minute. It's after the morning show. So we kind of have to figure out when to put it out, the podcast. Unlike the French, where sometimes we're doing it while it's happening. And I guess we should start by saying, first of all, you, for those who aren't watching this, because we only put out a clip, but you are outdoors doing this. You're saying in Central California, so you look great out there. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. Here are the two headlines. You tell me if I'm wrong. Boy, is this greased nicely for Djokovic on the men's side, and man, is Iga in trouble on the women's side.
Agree sincerely with the first point, and I think you could have actually made that even stronger.
Yes.
That's and right. Second point, I disagree.
Oh,
actually.
Really? Really? I like to hear
and
that.
So this is a little bit of a, maybe seems mentally contradictory, and maybe I've just been in the sun too long this summer. That's possible.
Also possible.
But I think I was most nervous about running into Coco Gauff, and at face value, she's in your quarter, but she has got a very, very tough path to get to the quarterfinal, whereas Iga,
oh,
I feel like
I got,
gets a bye.
I see what you
right?
did there. You, I see what you did. Okay. Okay.
I mean, do you look at the, you look at the bottom of the section, like Q1 is stacked.
It is stacked.
That's true, but they're all on the bottom, which is Coco's portion.
No, that is a good point. That is a good point. Let me tell you why I didn't have it that nuanced, because have you tried looking at these draws on both the ATP and the WTA sites when they first come out?
Yeah. Disastrous.
Disaster. So, like, first of all, I texted you when I looked at the men's side first, and I'm like, wait a minute, how can there be all these amazing matches in the first half? And I'm like, oh, first round, I'm like, oh, okay, that's wrong.
You know what's especially funny, man? The U.S. Open does, they do the least amount of fanfare with the draw, which is a mistake.
It is a mistake.
Like,
yes.
they should make this an event. You know, get there's. You know where there's famous people hanging out that love tennis? New York. You know,
totally.
They would love to come and participate in a U.S. Open draw and make, you know, the fanfare involved with the French Open and Wimbledon especially is awesome. New York needs to embrace that. Instead, they just, you know, bang, the computer spit this out. Well, if the computer's spitting it out, you shouldn't have a problem getting the right physical, you know, like the PDF draws
that's,
on the website.
That's
but
right.
They,
that's exactly
they failed.
Right. So you're right. I'm looking at Q1, which again, like just like you said it, the reason I said it the way I said it was because, yes, if you look at Q1 as a whole, it's about seven, well, let's call it six, really good players deep. But Iga's side of Q1 has an out of form Kudermetova, and I guess and I guess Petra Kvitova would be the main challenger on her side. But the other side has Goff, Ostapenko, Collins, and Andreeva.
I think Kvitova's on the other side too, but just like I think she would be the fourth round opponent for. I'm going off memory. I think she would be the fourth round opponent for Goff. Goff has something insane like.
Okay, this website, website can go to hell. It can go to hell. Yeah, because it's ridiculous if that's true.
Coco drawing Andreeva round two, I think, is trouble.
Yes.
And I'm not an idiot. Andreeva has a lot to prove. Thinking that she's all of a sudden a top 20 player when she's just, you know, had a couple of breakout performances this season is maybe asking a lot of her.
Yeah.
But the facts are she just hasn't played as much tennis this season, particularly recently as Coco has. So she's a fresher opponent and she's very dangerous. I know Coco ousted her at the French Open, and that was an interesting single game, single match market to watch, because I feel like Andreeva opened up like plus 120 and got bet to almost favorite or maybe even close favorite there. But Coco ultimately got the better of her because she's just a very more experienced player. But this tables have turned a little bit. She's coming in off of a huge title. She's played a lot of tennis in the last month and a half. And Andreeva, I think, is a very live or an early upset for Coco.
Yeah.
If Coco does. Yeah. If she gets through there, her round three opponent is nasty. A round four opponent, I think is a tough test. Whereas I think it's like Ostapenko and Kudermetova are sort of the other ranked players in and around Iga's section. And honestly, either one of them even gets to play Iga in round four, I'll be surprised. I really look at that top half as Iga basically got a bye to week two, maybe even a bye to the quarterfinal. And she could face Goff or Goff could get ousted early. But either way, I feel like Iga was most at risk in this tournament if she ran into Coco at the semifinal stage or at the final stage and Coco had just a little bit easier path. And instead she gets her at the quarterfinal stage and Coco's got just an absolute death march to get there. Yeah. Gauntlet to get there. So I after digesting a little bit, I feel like this is now kind of Iga's to lose. And I know her second serve issues are real. I know that, she won last year pretty ugly.
Let's talk about Iga for a second.
Sure.
Iga Swiatek, who has won four Grand Slams, just turned 22 years old. She has won, I want to say 15 tournaments. Don't hold me to that, but it's right around there. So she's like in, the on pace Serena schedule of things. However, the difference is this, and no one loves Iga more than I do, but she's very, J-Rod and I on Twitter talk about this a lot. She's really odd when it comes to certain tournaments and her being satisfied with the level she gets to in those tournaments. Does this make sense? So there's certain tournaments where she's like, well, I've never been to the semis before. I got to the semis, so that was good enough for me.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah. And it's an odd little quirk with her. Now, obviously, it doesn't matter at the French. She already won a U.S. Open. She's won tons of thousands, right? Some Masters tournaments. So it's not like when you look at it cumulatively, there's anything to complain about. But there are some odd performances as a result of that kind of mindset. And she's the one with the, with the psychologist, with the sports psychologist who's on, first person to do that, as I recall, maybe the second. So I don't know. It's just a weird little quirk. She still look for those who are newish to tennis and are listening to this. When you look at raw hard court numbers, Iga's number one, period, across the board. Coco and Vondrasova is who I have 2 and 3, believe it or not, followed by the Sabalenkas and the Pagulas of the world. I don't know where you have them stacked, but that's kind of where it stacks up right now. But Iga's the best, but I'm curious if you've noticed that sort of behavior and sort of wondered about it.
Yeah, no, I have noticed it. And I think it's somewhat relatively straightforward to explain, which is she's peerless. So she has to measure success by personally beating her past performance, right? She just needs to show progress within some way of measuring it against, well, what did I do here last year? Right. That's my guess. Because again, there's no one else in her generation who's performed even close to what she's done to this point. She's in a, Coco Gauff, I guess, would be sort of the other kind of young upcoming player. She's got 3 years on Coco.
Yeah, she does.
Like in just in raw age.
And that's a big 3 years too.
It's a big three. Yeah. No question. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's just tough for her to say like, you know, Hey, she's been world number one forever. You know, like you got to find a way to motivate yourself. You got to find a way to kind of self-evaluate and measure success. And I think that's the way she does it. She's a weird athlete in a lot of ways, but I think her uniqueness also affords her a little bit of a mental edge against a lot of the other women on tour. And, you know, I think there are pretty. Sorry about
that. No problem.
Sorry about that.
Drew has a phone call through Skype issue that we're working through. That's okay.
Yeah. Don't know how to shut this off. Sorry, guys.
That's all right.
But yeah, I get the sense that there are parts of her game that she, you know, desperately needs to really sharpen and improve. And if she tightens up like her second serve and in general tightens up some of her, you know, decisions about aggressiveness and managing aggressiveness throughout a match, you know, then she'd be unstoppable. And I think she ultimately will get there. But,
I think ultimately she will, no question, get there. I'm super.
Yeah.
By the way, side note, this has nothing to do with anything, but when you said ultimately she would get there, you know what I just read this this week? This has nothing to do with anything, everybody, so I apologize. Todd Wishnet, my buddy, sent me in the mail about 3 months ago. He's like, dude, have you read Agassi's autobiography? And I'm like, no. He goes, you'll love it. I go, oh, okay. Should I get it? He's like, I'm going to send it to you. That's how much I think you'll love it. Have you ever read his autobiography? It is
no
spectacular. It was written in like 2007. No, don't hold me to that. But it was like about 15 years ago. And here's the spoiler alert of the whole thing, but I would recommend everybody go read this because it is such a fascinating book. The headline is, he hated tennis. Hated it. Right? So like he struggled his whole career with this, you know, because his dad was the taskmaster. He became, you know, this great player. He always hated it for all the things. And yet in the end, he became the number one player in the world and he won 8 slams. Right. So it was like this whole thing where it's back and forth. So not at all comparing that to Iga in any way, but it is the mental side of this is so fascinating. Right. And so for someone like her, you say, great, you're making me feel even better about Iga when you're like, she's peerless. So she's like inventing goals. It's fascinating. Fascinating.
And I mean, good for her for doing it because, you know, that we are not that far removed from another peerless athlete in Naomi Osaka who went off the reservation.
Yeah.
And, you know, she never recaptured it. And I don't know if she will ever return to tennis. It's kind of a mystery.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, her vacating kind of the next great hardcore player has certainly been a huge, you know, bump and, you know,
well,
kind of
Ash Barty,
really allowed it,
Ash Barty too.
Same. Yeah.
The path was cleared. Yeah.
Yep, the path is cleared for her, so it's pretty pretty huge. And I mean, you know, if I had to make maybe I'll save it for the end. But I think Iga probably takes this one, and this is number 5.
She takes this one, and I, you know, I'm not betting on anyone else to take it. I have a quarter bet, which I just hinted at. But Iga is
you like the same bets I like. I think we didn't even preview this.
We did not preview
this. Is good.
Oh, shall I just say what I like? I like Vondrousova in.
Yeah.
I love Marketa Vondrousova, who, let me just say this, and you are great because I said to you after the Wimbledon pod, after Wimbledon completed, I like Vondrousova, by the way, plus 450 at DraftKings in Q3. That is Jesse Pegula's quote-unquote quarter, if you will. But I like Vondrousova plus 450. I said to you after the Wimbledon pod, or after Wimbledon completed, and Vondrousova ends up winning Wimbledon to win her first major, I was like, Drew, you and I didn't even mention her once. Yeah. And your response, I think, was appropriate, which is, can you blame us? Right?
Yeah, like, why would you?
Why would we have?
Right.
Why would we have?
She had played like 2 grass matches in her life coming into this season. So even considering her would have been a malpractice. Yeah, some people, I'm sure, saw enough quality in week 1 to get on board at pretty absurd prices for her. And, you know, I think she showed a constitution which matters for slam tennis. Right. She got, you know, she did not lose her cool when she was being outplayed by Svitolina. She just steady eddied her way through that match. You know, she had some moments where it looked like Ons was kind of keeping it, you know, putting it together in the final.
Oh, we got to talk about Ons too.
She put her head down. You know, it was Vondrousova. She put her head down and she, Yeah. She just powered through it. And I think, you know, I would typically look at a player like her who is coming off of what's a seemingly one of type of slam last time out, not really having a huge impressive run of form to back it up on hard court. And I would say, well, you know, she's got the career accomplishment. She's in exhale mode. And this doesn't mean much to her. And, you know, we can probably rule her out off the bat. But she got a great draw. And she doesn't seem to necessarily be built that way. At least just her mentality that she showed in Wimbledon specifically has me thinking this. And I tend to agree with you. I think, you know, we're way ahead of the cart before the horse here. But yeah, my final prediction would be Iga over Vondrousova.
Oh, in the finals. Yeah. Like I said before, only Swiatek and Goff have better hard court numbers, talking about, well, Swiatek, year, 6 months, 1 month, however you want to slice it up. Goff, obviously, we have to include the short term because she has been, in a short term basis, the best. But Vondrousova, just, you know, 12-month, 6-month, 1 month kind of thing, like just consistently across the board, 107.5, talking about serve and return percentages. 109.7 on a 6 month, 106. So, I mean, it's tremendous. So I definitely have her winning that quarter. You've got her in the finals against Iga. I would love to see that final.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
So you think Vondrousova in the finals? I have her winning the quarter, which means you do too. What bet do you have here, sir, that you'd like to share?
So, well, definitely, you know, I think kind of breaking down the rest of the quarters, Q2 is the one that I think you're looking for an absurd price on. Count me among the people who are sincerely concerned about the health and fitness of Elena Rybakina.
Yes.
Again, kind of going back to the U.S. Open draw criticism, they picked, I think, the worst photograph of her I've ever seen to put on like the social media that they did. You know how they did Iga's quarter,
yeah,
Pegula's quarter,
right?
Like, well, Elena's quarter, like they literally like found some absolutely beleaguered photo of her from Cincinnati or Canada or
horrible.
Something. And it's just like, yeah. Oh no, like, wow, geez, like, is she going to be okay? Like, what's going on here? But no, I think it's generally fair to wonder if she's going to be able to hold up in the heat and humidity. And it's generally fair to, you know, think that, you know, she needs like a good amount of time to fully regroup from the illness that she came down that she forced her to withdraw from Roland Garros. And mm-hmm. I still think that she's probably, you know, a top three player going forward. I think, you know, kind of looking at the, you know, the current 1-2-3 in terms of, you know, the year end race with Sabalenka, Iga and Rybakina, like, yeah, those are your three neutrally best players if they're all in form. But right now I don't think you can put her in that category, which means she's a risk of retirement. She's a risk of withdrawing. She's a risk of getting upset, which opens the door for Q2 to anyone, because I certainly don't have any strong confidence that Sakkari is going to do anything in this tournament.
I have no bet currently in Q2, nothing.
Yeah.
The same way.
And yeah. I think the answer really is wait to see where the qualifiers land and see if we can get like 100-1 on somebody.
like,
I think,
maybe so,
you know, because that if there's a totally ridiculous surprise, it's going to come from there. The
I'm trying to look through it and see like who would I be shocked by? I mean, everybody, right? Lynn Ju's playing well, but I'm not betting on her 50-1.
No.
About a Sloane Stephens, who obviously won this tournament, but she's 14-1. It's not like she's super low.
That's not a big enough price, right? Yeah. That's not a ridiculous price. Really, like the whole second tier, which is usually where you shop when you kind of feel like the favorite is vulnerable. No one in that tier really inspires me. So Q2 is going to be a wild card, I think.
I agree.
Not a technically a wild card, but you know what I mean? Like a shocker.
Totally.
Which again kind of helps the case for Iga. Like,
right.
If she's taken on a beaten up Coco in the quarters and then gets a wild card in the semis and, you know, is fresher for the finals than whoever comes out of the bottom, that's huge.
If I said to you right now, though, you must pick a winner. You don't have to bet on this, but you must pick a winner right now for Q2. The person you would say real quick would be, I'll say it with you. Last name. 3, 2, 1, Mukova.
Yeah, with that, I mean it's Mukova.
Yeah,
but she played so much tennis in Cincinnati too.
Did you get the feeling that the players were over that tournament this year?
Didn't get that read. My takeaways were more like, why are they taking this so seriously? Right? Like, why was Djokovic Alcaraz the most
fight to the death? Yeah.
Yeah. Why was that the most hotly contested best of three match we've seen in 10 years?
That was
so, so intense.
It was unbelievable. And I said out loud, I'm like, can you imagine that? Like, Southern Ohio, like they ended up with this match.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Southern Ohio, but it's not New York City. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, wow, this is bizarro. And it was amazing. It was amazing.
That was the best Masters final that I can remember. There's one from years ago that I'm forgetting.
Given the players, though, I mean, you're right. What was the call? I forgot his name. The Australian or South African, I think, is like shot making of the gods, he said in the middle of the match.
Yes, yes.
That's
very, very correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
He couldn't believe what he was watching. Maybe it was him. Yeah.
But that match was incredible. I was kind of like, man, these guys don't really, they're not just going to point for the US Open. They're really going to leave it all out here. Okay, let them go. I'm enjoying it. Same thing with the Iga Coco match. That felt like it had consequence and weight. Again, like I'm more nervous about the Iga's potential in Flushing Meadows if Coco's coming from another part of the draw that's not as challenging. Because, you know, snapping a lifetime 7-0 streak where you are not competitive in all seven.
Not competitive.
You know, that's a big mental hurdle to clear. And I think, you know, whatever work Coco's doing with Brad Gilbert, whatever just in general, you know, kind of focus and pressure she's brought to this swing, considering how poorly her season started. Like, I'm happy for her. I really wanted, you know, her to take this step forward. And I was kind of like a little nervous and distressed about the quality we were seeing from her in the winter and spring and, you know, even into the summer. So I'm glad she's here, but I think that she got she was the cold water. She got the cold water for me with this draw, because I would have said, you know, 24 hours ago, I'd have been like, she should be your absolute no doubt second choice.
Yep.
For this title. And now I think, like, if she gets to the semifinals, she's got to feel really, really positive about that. And if she gets there, I think she's going to be on fumes. Now that said, you know, again, we're talking about a Q2 opponent who might be, you know, like the Magdalenette of the Australian Open kind of setup, you know, like, like just a truly happy to be here type of player. And that might be, you know, what she needs to ultimately get this title. So I'm not ruling it out, but boy, oh boy, I feel like she, you know, her probability and her odds and her prices all of a sudden are upside down, considering how tough that path is. Q3, we talked a little bit about Pegula's quarter.
Love that. We'll just throw that in for everyone. The next one is Sabalenka's quarter.
Sabalenka's quarter. And that is Sabalenka's quarter.
It is.
I'll save my favorite bet for just a minute here, but Pegula's quarter's tough too. She does not have an easy path out of there at all.
I think that one was Samsonova, Keys, Fernandez, yeah. Andrescu, a lot of past champs in there.
A lot of really you know, players with success at this venue, players with who are playing well now. Like there's a lot of trouble for Pegula in there. My guess is that quarter comes down to Vondrousova versus Samsonova, but I'm not sure if you follow some of the offshore prices, but Samsonova has drifted aggressively in a couple offshore markets. So it's almost, I feel like someone almost knows that something's not right with her physically. I have not heard this, but I'm getting this weird pattern of when my price is very off market on Samsonova, I am just getting railroaded both ways. Like I'm like, you know, with like the Rybakina Samsonova match in Canada. I was like, why is this not minus 250 Rybakina? What is going on here? She went off as like a small favorite there. I could not like square that price even remotely. And of course, Samsonova comes back from 1-6 and wins.
That I think I had Samsonova that day. I had her in the match. Yeah, that was the one. Yep.
She's been playing well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think she can get out of her section, but I don't think she beats Vondrousova. And I worry a bit about her physically. And again, the drifting of her prices got me spooked. Like someone knows she's not physically well. She's always a question mark about winning seven matches. So I can't in good conscience say play whatever, you know, some of the big prices on there.
Drew, she's always a question mark when she has seven match points, let alone winning seven matches. Well,
yeah. What was that last year against Tomljanovic?
Do you remember that? I was on a plane for that. And I had her in that match, and I could not believe what I was watching.
I was in Hawaii, and I almost threw my phone over the balcony.
Me too.
I was like, what is happening?
By the way, speaking of that, this has nothing to do with anything, but speaking of that, I don't know if I texted you on this. I had Marc-Andrea Wessler, I believe that's the name I don't know how you pronounce it. I had him against Shevchenko on Sunday, the day of the Alcaraz-Djokovic match in Winston-Salem. They played a few matches the first day, and I got him at plus 200. He was plus 115 by match time, which is maybe the sickest CLV I've ever gotten in my life on anything. He's up 4-love in the final set, and Shevchenko quits. That was, you talk about like the Samsonova throwing the phone. That was about as close to pure abject frustration as I've ever gotten on any of this stuff. I'm like, even when you're good, you can't win sometimes.
Sometimes that's the harbinger of really good things are coming.
I hope
right?
so.
If you're reading the matches right, but the people looking at your accounts are like, well, he sucks.
You know, yeah.
This guy's bleeding. Like, give him what he wants. like sometimes that's the sign that it's about to go hot. So I'll give you that as a lifeline there. But Samsonova Vondrousova to me, I think is how Q3 shakes out. I like Vondrousova in that match. And I really like, if you can crack Q3, I think you've got a finalist, and I think you got a finalist price.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Does Leila Fernandez interest you at all in any form? No.
I mean, she's done it before.
She's done it before. By the way, Emma's not in this. Emma Raducanu is not a part of the draw, or is she?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe she is. Though. Yeah, I don't believe.
Yeah, I think she's still recovering from wrist surgery.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that though. Yeah. Maybe back surgery. I can't remember, but she'll be back next year probably. The Q4 for me at least. This is. I'm not exactly sure why Sabalenka is plus 120-ish. I feel my numbers say she should be over 50% there. And it's because Q4 is weak. And yes, I'm including Jans Jabeur in that commentary. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite way to play the women's draw is stage of elimination. Rina Sabalenka semifinals.
Wow. What's the number?
It's going to be big. It hasn't popped yet, but it's going to be like plus 250-ish would be my guess, because she's got to win her quarter and then lose that match in the semis. And I'm count me among the people that believes that this is an actual thing with her right now, that, she cannot get past whatever mental demons exist regarding the semifinal experience. The semifinal she hurdled was Magda Linette.
Yeah.
I mean, if that was not Magda Linette in that moment, is she the Australian Open champion? I don't know. I don't know that you can really hold Wimbledon against her, because Ons like raised her level pretty impressively in that match to oust her.
We got to talk about Ons. We'll go there next.
Some of the semifinal losses, the Mukova French Open was the worst. Some of these semifinal losses are, she's wearing it.
The Mukova one was out of control. That was her match.
Yeah, I can't recall seeing a more aggressive meltdown.
Yeah, that was brutal. The Ons Jabeur thing is very simple, which is you had her at Wimbledon last year. She gets all the way to the finals. She loses to Rybakina. You had 33-1. It was a great bet. Ons Jabeur has gotten to 3 slam finals, I believe. Three.
Yeah. 2 Wimbys in the U.S. Open last year.
Yeah. She's lost them all. At Wimbledon, like you said, she had a couple matches there. Was it Sabalenka and Rybakina? Where she was unbelievable coming from behind to win.
Yeah. 3 in a row. She nuked Kvitova as a dog. She came back on Rybakina. She came back on Sabalenka.
The comebacks were
The comebacks were her highest level that we saw. That was the highest level I've ever seen her play tennis, actually.
Yeah.
She was playing better than she played in last year's Wimbledon run.
And the flip side of that then she gets the final and she gets just, it wasn't that she just got beat. It wasn't very difficult to tell. It just felt like it was too much. The nerves were she wasn't never going to win. I mean, not taking anything away from Van der Sova, but I just wonder, and I agree with you about this Sabalenka quarter, which is, it's Jabeur, it's Zhang Xinwen, it's Barbara Krejcikova. I guess Daria Kasatkina is probably the next best option there.
Sabalenka is like 62-62 against her.
Yeah.
And by my numbers, she's just the wrong matchup for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Kasatkina, love her, love watching her play, seeing her construct points, love seeing her unravel really good serve, but Sabalenka is exactly the wrong person to try to get through. I think Sabalenka comes through the quarter pretty cleanly. I like plus 120 there. I'll be against her in the semifinals until she proves otherwise, unless it's literally against somebody that she has no business losing to. I mean, some of these losses in the semis for Sabalenka have come at the hands of like competent players. Like Iga beat her last year in the semis, and that was not fluky. Like, Iga was the better player ultimately, but, that was a super even match. Until she really conquers that demon, I think it's a bet against in semis.
Stage of elimination, semis, when that comes
out. Stage of elimination.
Drew is all about it. Sabalenka having Vondrasova. Yeah.
Plus two, anything better than plus 250 is a bet.
Okay. I'm just looking at some of these other before we move on to the men's, which is probably not going to be nearly as fascinating. Well, maybe it will be. I'm looking at just some of the, I'll use DraftKings. What else do they have here? Not to win. Iga's minus 330, not to win the tournament. First time winner. Yes. Is minus 280.
I guess.
No is 2-1. Yeah.
I meant to ask you something before we move off women entirely.
Please. Yeah.
Do you have a thesis about the heavy duty ball?
Oh, I don't. No. What is yours?
I'm struggling here.
Yeah.
If you don't already know, last year they used the regular duty balls, and a bunch of the women complained because they used the heavy duty balls for the men. My guess is that the heavy duty balls they don't pop as much fuzz, right? So it's a little bit, it's a little tougher. It's tougher to hit through a ball when it's like, coming apart. So it should, in my opinion, handle the more powerful players if they're using the heavy duty ball.
Should benefit the heavy.
Yeah. If you're trying to hit through, it should help you.
Yeah.
So should benefit a player like Sabalenka. Should benefit a player like Iga. Rybakina if she's got it. Pegula if she's got it. Like, it could shock out if that matters.
I thought, I fit in the category of ball complaints. I thought last year's sort of the sunshine double, was it Indian Wells in Miami where they used the smaller balls? Do you remember that episode?
Yeah.
That was that I agreed with. Like that, I'm like, why are we doing that? Iga hated that. I'd agree with you. I think if anything, it would benefit, but I don't know, like, how much I put in that when handicapping.
Yeah, I think take a player like Sabalenka, look at some of her early round winner to unforced error ratios last year, compare them to what she looks like in the first couple rounds this year, and maybe draw some conclusions. But I don't have a very strong thesis on that. It's a point of note that is different this year.
One last player. I just want to, just for thoroughness' sake, Sloane Stephens in 2018 beat Maddie Keys in Q3. That's Vondrousova. We both like Vondrousova there. We didn't talk beforehand. Do you put any stock in Maddie Keys having a run?
She could. Yeah. Surely. Yeah. If she's right physically, she could. I don't really get what's going on with her. We saw some highs from her at Wimbledon that were a total surprise to me. And then we've seen some lows since. So it's tough to really kind of pinpoint what's going on with her physically. But I'm not really super excited about any of the U.S. women, where they landed in the draw this year.
DraftKings has a prop, Swiatek, Sabalenka, and Pegula versus the field, minus 140. The field is plus 100. What's your instinct on that without having to crunch the numbers?
I would just put that in the Iga bucket only.
Yep. That's my reaction too. All right.
I mean, Pegula, we didn't really give her a ton of fair shake here, but like she won Montreal. I've heard a lot of people saying that conditions, ball, blah, blah, blah. Montreal is a very, very fair analog for what to expect here in conditions. She beat Iga at Montreal.
And she won the title on the double header for Samsonova, right? She had to play twice in one day.
Yes.
By the way, a lot of people get upset about that, but like the way I understand it, these tournaments, in order to extend it a day, it costs them so much money. So they can't when like weather is involved. So essentially Pegula got to play a tired player later in the day.
Yeah.
But I love her.
It was effectively a title via walkover.
Yeah.
For all practical purposes.
I mean, I love her and everything. I've bet on her many, many, many times over the years to good success, but I don't see it here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Men's side.
Yeah.
We started out by saying this one you did agree to, which is, oh boy, Djokovic is in Q4. He's got, an out of form Ojeda Aliassime. Taylor Fritz is in there. And then Tsitsipas plays Milos Raonic in the first round, which maybe for first round matches might be the greatest of them all, because you never know with Raonic. There's always a puncher's chance in what is his last tournament. By the way, John Isner and Raonic, last tournament, correct? Isner for sure. Yeah. I don't know about Raonic. I think it is.
Probably. Kei Nishikori last tournament?
Kei Nishikori, you said? What was that?
Do you think this might be his last tournament too?
I mean, he hasn't played in so long, for so many, at least a year now, right? Where he's just gotten back on tour.
He's been on weird lower level stuff. Yeah. I kind of feel like there's a bunch of guys who are kind of making the last run out this time.
Yeah. How about if you're John Isner, right? Or Raonic, any of these guys, and you're like, you were a spectacular tennis player. It's like Tommy Hearns, right? Had the misfortune of being born when Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard were born. Like, so sorry, John Isner, you probably would have won a lot of tournaments, but maybe a slam, who knows? But you were born at the same time Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. I'm sorry.
He did win a lot of tournaments. They were just all in Atlanta. And they're only worth 250.
That's right. All 250s. And his serve is not quite what it used to be. So anyway, I just mentioned everybody of note in Djokovic's quarter. Like, this is a free pass to the semis.
It's a free pass. And actually, it's a free pass to the final. Because there are four men in this draw who have better than a 5% chance of beating Djokovic, and they're all on the top.
Alcaraz, Medvedev, Sinner, and Demonour.
I would go Zverev.
I was going to say Zverev, fourth. And then I got
Zverev as a fourth.
Yeah. Okay.
And the Zverev, I'm only giving it to him because what we saw 2 years ago in that semifinal.
Yeah. So let's start at the top.
So all four are on the top. So he's only going to have to play one of them.
Alcaraz, Zverev, and Sinner are all in Q1. By the way, there's other, like Dimitrov, Thompson, Evans, Griegsbourg. I mean, there's some players who had a good hardcourt season. But Alcaraz, Zverev, and Sinner, all in Q1. Q2, for my money, is the most competitive. Medvedev, Demonour, Urkacz, Berrettini, Monfils, Rublev, Khachanov. It's pretty good.
Yeah, fun one.
And then Q3, you're probably right. I mean, Casper Ruud, he's not beating Djokovic. Tiafoe, puncher's chance, but, you know, not really his best this year. Davidovich Rakina, always tough. Holger Rune, he doesn't have the best hardcourt numbers, by the way. Korda, and then shall I give a couple quarter picks? I got Tommy Paul 7-1 in Q3.
The numbers would tell you he's clearly a top 10 hard quarter right now, yep. Which I feel like defies eye test a little, but the numbers are what they are.
I think Demonour 12-1 in Q2 is worth a bet. It's a tough quarter, but I really do, based on numbers, I think those are the best quarter bets on the board.
Cool. I can't really strongly disagree. The macro view of the men's draw is if Djokovic doesn't make the final, it's because he got defaulted for hitting a ball girl. I think that's the scariest thing that could knock him out of this tournament before the final.
We just had greatness walk in during the podcast, by the way. Jimmy Vaccaro, Hall of Famer, walked in during the podcast. He didn't have much to say about tennis. I just have to point that out.
Hall of Famer. I guess I'm not even really being glib. I don't think anyone on the bottom half of the draw realistically has a chance to beat Djokovic.
Yeah.
This includes Tsitsipas. This includes Rune. And, you know, the Rune part of the story is a tough one for me because I have a bunch of dead Rune tickets.
I remember.
I've graded them in pencil with L's.
What month did you bet those? You bet them early in the year.
Like January.
Yeah.
It was a while ago. Because I figured he was going to have highs and lows and do well in the Masters, but, you know, kind of struggle at the slam level, figure out best of five as we went through the season, and, you know, maybe be peaking when everyone else was gassed when we got to the, you know, the U.S. Open. But it did not play out that way. He went deep into the French Open. He went deep into Wimbledon. He really, really, really kind of fired all of his bullets in spring and summer, and he is limping right now. And, you know, when he won Paris last year as his breakout tournament, it was a Masters. It's at the end of the season, so people kind of forget about it. I think Jack Sock won 1 year, or, you know, did Jack Sock made it one? Yeah, Jack Sock might have won it 1 year. I feel like Filip Krajinovic went to the finals 1 year there. Like, Paris has some weird results, but the Rune result was special because he beat Djokovic head to head in that final, and it was like, oh my God, like, he's got that level. That's awesome. Like, Djokovic was super in form and he beat him head to head. And so you have that kind of mental ammunition. You're going to win a slam one day. And, you know, I kind of assumed that there would be a summer of back and forth battles between Djokovic and Alcaraz. And those two might be, take enough damage that Rune could sneak an early-ish title. Cause sometimes the US Open is a debutante type of experience. You know, it was for Medvedev, it was for Alcaraz last year, it was for Thiem finally getting his first title. And, you know, like, there is a whiff of that. But the problem is Djokovic just hasn't played very much tennis this year.
Right.
Like, he is way, way, way later load to this point in the season than he normally would be. And I think that matters. I think that, you know, because some of his US Open results over the balance of his career are the least impressive of the slams. Which doesn't entirely make sense, but he doesn't do especially well in humidity. He doesn't do especially well in daytime matches in humidity. And, oh, by the way, they play the men's final in the day, in the heat of the day. And
he was going to collapse in that match against Alcaraz in Cincinnati.
Yeah, he did. It's not, he doesn't, he does not perform especially well physically in these conditions. So he's got that. He's got to overcome that, surely. But, you know, just the fact that he hasn't really fired as many bolts this year, I think matters. Rune, on the other hand, is just absolutely on fumes. Now, if Rune, like, surprises and makes a run here, like, I'll be happy for him. I mean, I would like to see him kind of get to the level of an Alcaraz and you know, give us a real deal rivalry at the slam level for the next generation. But it doesn't, I feel like I'm a year early there, maybe. And then Rude, I mean, if you have Rude Djokovic semifinal, I'd probably lay 500 on Djokovic without really blinking. If we have who and like the other guys in that, yeah, Tommy Paul is absolutely live to come through Q3. Tiafoe, I suppose, is.
Davidovich-Fokina always gives.
Davidovich-Fokina, yeah, sure.
Gives Djokovic trouble a little bit.
Yeah, he's a tough out. But
I don't believe in Korda. I don't believe in Korda.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm not going to bet him, but, yeah. You know, who knows what you're going to get with him. But the, cause his highs are high. The, so I think ultimately the, you know, the path for Djokovic out of Q4 is very straightforward. The path to the final in that, you know, whoever comes out of Q3 is very straightforward. And the opposite, you know, from a macro standpoint, I don't think you could have given Alcaraz a worse stretch to get there.
So it really is bad.
It's crazy, crazy tilted in favor of Djokovic in terms of path. Alcaraz's path includes Dan Evans, who won Washington
mm-hmm.
in round three. Dan is live.
He was
but
amazing
he's gonna be
in
tough.
Washington. Yeah, he was amazing in Washington. Greek sport.
His path includes Skamnori, who beat him in Rio. And in general, can even if Skam does not win that match, he could make it go 5 hours. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. you know, he's going to potentially do a little bit of damage. And then you got to play the winner of potentially Zverev, Sinner. Sinner plays Alcaraz tough. Probably should have beat him last year in the quarterfinal, I think they played. That was effectively the de facto final last year at the US Open. Sinner's tough. Zverev is tough. I've seen enough from Zverev in this run since his French Open semi.
I think he's
as back as he's going to be.
I agree.
And the best he ever played was his US Open run where he almost beat Djokovic in the semifinals. Came oh so close 2 years ago. And if that guy shows up, he could definitely beat Alcaraz, in my opinion. I don't know that there's enough of a gap between those players to say Alcaraz should be bigger than like minus 200 in that match. And so it's going to be tough for Alcaraz to get out of Q1. Presumably, I guess Medvedev is your favorite in Q2. I don't have a strong read
Q2
on what's going on with him.
Stacked. Yeah. Medvedev, it wouldn't surprise me early. It wouldn't surprise me whatever happens with him. I could see him winning the court, but that court, I'm curious who you like here. Medvedev, the Drapers, Yaris, Purcells of the world, all who have, you know, have can be a little bit frightened. Dimonor. Or Kotz, Berrettini, who at his best would be trouble. Monfils at his best is trouble. Rublev, Koric, Khachanov. I mean, that quarter is super stacked. Let me buttress your point about Alcaraz. If you had to say the best five hard court players in the world right now, Djokovic, Alcaraz, whichever order you want to put him in, Medvedev 3, Sinner 4, who am I missing in the top five?
I think Zverev at current form.
Probably. Point being, all the other four are all up in the top.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Besides
correct.
Djokovic.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And Zverev's, I mean, absolutely. Sinner's only going to have to play probably, he's only going to have to play one. He may play two of them. Alcaraz may play two of them. Medvedev, when you see a quarter, and Medvedev's in there, my initial reaction is, well, who's on the bottom of that quarter? And it's his little brother, Zverev.
Rublev. Yeah.
Like that big brother, little brother relationship, I don't think is over. So sorry, Rublev, maybe another year.
Yeah.
He definitely, he still really needs, he can't get over the quarterfinal hump to save his life.
Cannot.
And I think your point is fair, where all of the kind of dark horses all landed in Q2. You mentioned Hurkacz. He I don't think he should have beaten Alcaraz, but he was there.
His serve in that tournament was unbelievable. I mean, about Alcaraz, because this is related to that. Alcaraz has played a lot of tough matches where guys have really pushed him. Now, he ends up winning almost all of them, except for the Djokovic one.
Yeah.
But does that, like, give you a little bit of pause with him where you're like, okay, you're not exactly crushing people at this point?
No question. But it's not about the not crushing people. It's much more about the you're effectively, electively taking damage.
That's what I mean. You're like, accumulating.
Yeah, right. You're accumulating fatigue. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Why? Don't accumulate this fatigue. Win these matches in straights and preserve your best stuff for when it matters most. Like, that should be the mental calculus. And he'll get there, surely. He's young enough that maybe it doesn't matter as much for him as it would for a player who is in their later 20s or 30s. But considering the fact that now two out of the three most high profile matches he's played this year, he's basically failed physically, I would say that's something he should have higher, more priority on not taking this fatigue.
Yeah.
You should have, more. And I think coming into this tournament, Alcaraz, a week ago, before they played the Cincinnati final, he was the favorite here in the U.S. Open. I think we might have even talked about it on your show, but
I
can't 100% remember.
We did.
And the thesis was like, okay, like, he's playing too much. Like, Djokovic, if he's a dog in the head-to-head, is the bet. Like, this is going to be pretty straightforward. I don't think there's any way Djokovic closes a dog in a final against Alcaraz now. Not considering what he's going to go through to get there. Not considering, what happened in Cincinnati, and not considering how much more tennis he's played in this hard court swing. So, Alcaraz winning this tournament would genuinely surprise me.
So have we just sort of talked ourselves into a plus? I mean, again, you can't. I mean, plus 125 is not good enough, I guess, on Djokovic to win the tournament, but it ain't terrible.
I have to math it out a little bit, I guess, but two, there's value in Djokovic in pocket in two ways. One is Alcaraz gets popped, which he could. And one is Djokovic is just going to close like minus 150 against him in the final.
And Djokovic will have no tread on the tire, and Alcaraz will have tons of it.
Correct.
Right. Ergo the minus 150. So I mean, this couldn't have broken better for Djokovic. Could not.
It really couldn't.
He's got to be.
There's whiffs of this is maybe the last one where he beats Alcaraz.
It would also be 24 for him, which would tie Margaret.
It would
Court.
Be 24, right?
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, right. I mean, he's got to be thinking that way.
Yeah. There's whiffs.
Yeah, that Cincinnati final did have a little thriller in Manila to it.
Yes, great call.
Yeah,
yes,
which was like,
exactly.
Ali won, but he knew in the corner, this is the end of the greatness.
Yes. This is it. This was it. And I like, if the draw wasn't the way it was, if it wasn't stacked in his favor, I don't know that I would be saying this with such sincerity, but I think he wins this U.S. Open, and I think this... I'm not saying that this is it. Like, he certainly could win Wimbledon next year. He certainly could. He's we still have no idea if Alcaraz has the goods to win on the speedy courts in Australia. But the crossover was this year, right?
Yep.
Alcaraz on the way up, Djokovic on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens next is Alcaraz is minus 200 every time they play.
Yeah.
So it's this is it. He's got to recognize that too.
I'm sure he does, though. I mean, again, I'll cite the Agassi book again. I mean, when you read about a guy's career like that, where you just, when he gives you a window into his mind, not only every tournament, but every match, where his head was with Brooke Shields, where it was with, Steffi Graf, like all the things that are going on in his life, and how, as a bettor, we would never have had any idea. Right, we would never have been able to know the intangibles, but with a guy like Djokovic, you kind of know you're getting it every time. The best, there's no Djokovic being distracted, right, at this point. So at least we have that going for you. Now, your point is still well taken. I mean, Novak Djokovic is, and we'll get the up to the day age right here. He's 36 years old. 36 years old. He turned 36 in May. Who was it? Was it? I can't remember. Forgive me if I don't remember who said this on Twitter, but during that match, he pointed out, he goes, the best tennis players in the world, the best two tennis players in the world are 36 and 20. Like that. Think about how.
That's not right.
Shouldn't be that way. Sports Savant, I want to say it was, who said that.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, 36 and 20. Yeah. And, you know, Federer's gone. Nadal's about to be gone. And, only matter of time, Djokovic. We will see, like, in other words, unlike with Iga, where the path cleared for her with Ash Barty, and as you said, Naomi Osaka, who won four slams herself. Like, Iga's just tied with Naomi. That's amazing to think about it that way.
Yeah.
This would be, you know, who would be the one to challenge Alcaraz moving forward? I don't know who I would. Rune, I guess.
Maybe. If you want to go with the, I think we're expecting that at some point Sinner doesn't mentally collapse.
Sinner,
we're expecting
Sinner.
At some point Rune gets a little bit more physically robusto.
Yeah.
And if either of those two things happens, then you got a three-way race like the old big three, which would be exciting. I think that's what men's tennis wants. That's what I want.
Yeah.
Certainly. I would love to have a little rotating rivalry, trying to figure out who's the best on which surface between those guys. That would be awesome. Alcaraz probably is the best of those players, but there may be surface specific ways that other guys can get an edge on it. That'd be awesome. Okay. I think the analog is going back to the women's side is like Osaka took the crown from Serena and that was it. Serena realistically didn't have another shot at a slam in her after that, from what I remember.
Yep.
And I think that is, you know, we're close to there for this rivalry between Djokovic and Alcaraz. And it's been a really special year of tennis because of the fact that these two have been so like objectively close in like talent. And it's because of the perfect crossover of, you know, Djokovic coming off peak and Alcaraz approaching. And, you know, the leveling factors were just experience and, you know, conditioning. And, you know, I think reflecting on the French Open, I'm glad I was where I was market wise, but it's even more clear now that that was just a tactical war and the experience should have been the factor that, you know, mattered the most, much more than, you know, ability, shot making, comfortable, you know, surface, you name it. Like that was just a tactical war. And that same advantage wasn't there at Wimbledon because Djokovic just didn't have enough information on what Alcaraz on grass was and caught him by surprise to a degree. And I think, you know, the hard court data that I've got and the feeling that I've got, you know, kind of handicapping these players says Djokovic wins this head to head if it gets there in a, let's pretend all of this, you know, this fanfare about how much harder Alcaraz's path is does not materialize. Zverev gets popped. Sinner crashes out to an Altmaier type of player in round two. And, and you know, somebody that's a true surprise wins Q2. And Alcaraz's path is just as clean as Djokovic's. In that neutral handicap, I still think I'm lay the price with Djokovic because for whatever reason, Alcaraz does not, he's a little bit too aggressive still in terms of trying to force a point, trying to end a point. And you can't play that way against Djokovic. And he needs to learn that the hard way. And Cincinnati was probably part one, and I feel like a U.S. Open final is probably part two. And maybe he finally gets solved by the time we get to Australia. Or maybe it's next U.S. Open. I don't know. It could be longer, I guess. But to a degree, trying to play that way against Djokovic is asking for trouble.
It's interesting.
And Alcaraz plays that way against everybody, too. Like, I don't think it's an accident that he's going like three sets against Max Purcell.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an accident that he's like losing to, you know, Hubert Hurkacz, right? Like
this is a great point, Drew. This is again, I didn't expect to talk about this three different times, but Brad Gilbert's biggest advice to Andre Agassi as his coach, which led him, one could argue, Brad Gilbert was with him for 7 out of his 8 slams, was, Andre, you don't have to be perfect on every point. Let your opponent lose the point. And this was his biggest revelation. Like, Agassi's mind was blown by this, because up until that point in his life, no one had ever said that to him before. And there's a little bit of that with Alcaraz. You're right.
Yeah, yeah.
A little bit of that.
And actually, I may be reaching here, we may be too far down narrative street, but it felt like he could have maybe reinforced that lesson the wrong way with Wimbledon.
Hmm.
You know? Like, he won that Wimbledon match because he was making shots that we haven't seen a tennis player make it,
right,
as long as I can remember. And he did a little bit of that in Cincinnati too, but he had to really, really, really work hard to make those shots.
Yeah.
And it's tough. It's a tough way to live. It's a tough way to be. You're going to induce a physical strenuous physical demands like that are tough in a 5-hour match. And that's probably what we're looking at. So I think to a degree, the inexperience that he will bring into this current head-to-head, even if it is neutral in every other way, I think I'd still lay the price with Djokovic in the final. And I think market-wide, I don't see any... Like, I don't see, like, a set of circumstances where the market makers all of a sudden flip and say, no, Alcaraz needs to be the favorite in this U.S. Open final, right? Djokovic, I think... unless he's literally limping in off of an injury, I think Djokovic goes off -150.
Which, again, short of having done the math here on a match-by-match basis and hypothetical lines, +125 would be a nice thing to have in pocket. Feels
yeah,
way.
Right, right. Yeah. Because the other universe where it's Djokovic against Dibanev.
That's right.
Sinner? I mean, you know, the other universe where Alcaraz gets popped, you know, Djokovic is like -500.
Yeah. Last thing, I was at the sportsbook at Aria the other day, and somebody asked me, they're like, oh, you know, because they listen to the show, they're like, oh, you know, you're ahead of the curve on Iga, you're ahead of the curve on Alcaraz. Is there someone out there like that now? And I said to them, I go, well, you know, the reason that it was more about Iga than Alcaraz is because with the big three, it was harder to project Alcaraz, like when that would be that he would overcome this. And now we're here, and those guys, two of the three, are retiring at least. If Nadal, in fact, goes through with that here within a year, which he will. And the answer that I came up with, I was like, the difference is that in those days, you know, you knew that those three guys were getting older. And on the women's side, there wasn't that much top heaviness where you're like, okay, she can't overcome this. Now it's sort of like, you know, the closest comp I could come to was Mira Andreeva, right? Where someone who's not really known, because the Runes of the world are known. So Mira Andreeva was the closest, but I'm like, yeah, but still, like you said, like all the mainly the stats we have are on ITF and Challenger, right? They're not.
Yeah, it's really, really tough to parse that.
Yeah, they're not main draw stats. So it's like, I don't know. This could be the state of tennis with this kind of top heaviness of these two, Iga on one side, Carlos Alcaraz on the other, for a decade. I don't know. Might be.
Yeah. I mean, I think, if you kind of build out a probability distribution, that's got to be at least 20%.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So, just in review, we both like Vondrousova. You like her into the finals. I like her to win the quarter as well. Like you, you like stage of elimination for Sabalenka, and I think we both agree about how the Djokovic draw is just a beautiful, beautiful thing. Have you had any chance to look at first round matches, by the way? I don't think the prices are even out yet, are they? Let me see.
Have come out in the last hour or two. I have not broken
nope,
them down yet.
I have not. I'm looking right now, and at least in certain faraway places, they don't exist.
I'll tell you what, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to get boots on the ground, round one and round two.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, buddy.
Oh, wow. Yeah, hold on.
We're getting boots on the ground. We're going to get some inside intel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, heading to New York on Sunday.
Good for you. I am meeting Sunday, meaning the day after tomorrow or the day or 3 days Sunday.
Day after tomorrow. Day
okay.
After tomorrow. I'm gonna catch the madness of a million rounds.
So I am trying to do the first weekend. So
nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Next week. but I have not got confirmation of that. But that would entail me leaving after a numbers game Friday, showing up for night matches, spending all day Saturday there, early Sunday, and then bouncing, which I would love.
You know how I know tennis is in a really good place?
That we're willing to do that?
No, it's like the hottest ticket since Taylor Swift came to town. Like,
really?
It's crazy, crazy, crazy what the ticket prices are like right now for the good stuff.
Drew, I told you, when I went to Indian Wells, which you said, you go, no one goes to that tournament. I was like,
usually not.
Dude, it was packed. And it is not an easy place to get to. And it was packed.
Netflix impact? Netflix effect? Is that what's going on? What's happening here?
I don't.
You know what it is? It's the Megapod. We're getting people fired up for tennis.
That's what it is, Drew. It's the Megapod. It's exactly what's doing it. I honestly think it was because, wait a minute, I can go in California desert and like watch the Igas and the Carlitos of the world up close. And but my God, count me in. I do think there's also still, even at that point, I said there was still a post-pandemic thing where people wanted to get out of the house. I think we're past but I think, but you're probably right about the U.S. Open. Like, that is going to be mayhem.
It's a hot ticket, man.
Yeah. Where do you stay, by the way? You don't have to give an exact location because I don't want people stalking you, but like, where, you in the city?
I have accommodations via NBC.
Via what?
Via NBC.
Via NBC. Oh, beautiful.
I don't know where.
Are you going on behalf of NBC to go?
No. We're doing a talent summit at HQ in Stanford, and then I'm going to head over to Fletcher Meadows in the evening both days.
Have a great trip. I'll try to tag team at the end. I'll come in when you're leaving. That'll be awesome. Dude, thank you so much. Let me just say this also to people. Drew Dinsick, for those who listen to this podcast and listen to a numbers game, Drew does everything that we ever ask him to do. Like, I cannot tell you how appreciative I am for how accessible you are after all this time. I want you to know how much I appreciate that, man. And these, obviously, when it comes to tennis, it's sort of a labor of love for you and me. Like, this, we love this so much that we're kind of willing to talk about this whenever. By the way, forgive me, I like interrupted you five times at the beginning because I'm so excited to talk about it. I just want everybody to listen to know how awesome you are and just being accessible, because a lot of people, quite frankly, how can I put this? They don't really get how this works. And maybe people who really have more reason to show up than you do have an excuse why they don't. So I just want to say, I love that about you, and I always appreciate it. I want you to know how much I appreciate it. How about that?
Oh, of course. It's a karmic, it's a karmic endeavor on top of a labor of love. You know, the more people we get into the sport of tennis and from a betting standpoint, the more we grow the interest in the sport and the handle, I think it helps us all. So
may you have a profitable U.S. Open, man.
You as well.
Let's
put a bow on this season.
Let's do it. And safe travels to New York, man. Have a great time.
All right. Hey, take care, guys.
Drew Dinsick, everybody, at Whale_Capper. Again, the podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports, Bet the Edge. Good luck with all your tennis bets for this next couple weeks of the U.S. Open.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.